in association with Newsarama. Welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress, back from the FX Con in Orlando with floor interviews underarm to share with you, the listener. Eventually, a lot of these interviews are going to end up becoming videos, and be looking for that. But for now, enjoy the dulcet tones of some of my friends who are Word Balloon regulars and some rare opportunities to speak to some new people as well. You're going to hear from artist Jeremy Hahn, who will be talking about his one-shot Arkham Asylum for the Battle of the Cow series for DC, and Berserker, a great new miniseries from Top Cow. Jonathan Hickman joins us to talk about Dark Reign Fantastic Four and his coming takeover of the regular Fantastic Four series. Also, some talk about Secret Warriors, the great series he's co-writing with Brian Bendis, Nick Fury, and his Secret Warriors. Ben Templesmith joins us to talk about his IDW work and the notion of more fell on the way from him and Moran Ellis eventually. A look at Avatar Comics with discussions with William Christensen, the publisher of Avatar, Mike Wolfer, the co-writer and artist on Gravel. Christos Gage joins us to talk about his Avatar book, Absolution, but we also get in some Marvel talk about Avengers, the Initiative, Dark Reign, and his new miniseries, House of M, Masters of Evil, along with some talk about Wildstorm and his G.I. Joe work for IDW. We wrap things up on this session with marketing director of Marvel Comics, Jim McCann, who is also writing New Avengers, The Reunion, the story of Mockingbird and Hawkeye. We're two issues in, two more to go, and Jim gives us a state of the series and some hints of some new projects coming down the way. I also had the opportunity of moderating a few panels, and in the weeks and months ahead, you will be seeing videos of those. They'll be at the Word Balloon website, and we'll have YouTube links of the great video that I was able to do. I did a Women of the Wheatonverse panel, and had a great time speaking to the ladies. The ladies. Also spoke to Joe Michael Linzer, Billy Tucci, and Dan Brereton, each celebrating milestone anniversaries of their creator-owned projects of the 80s and 90s, Dawn, She, and The Nocturnals, respectively, and even managed to moderate one panel featuring Star Trek great, the legendary Leonard Nimoy. I'm still shaking. But without further ado, let's turn things over to my floor interviews. This is part one of my FXCon coverage here on Word Balloon. John Suntress here at the FXCon International in Orlando, Florida, and very happy to see one of my favorites that we always spend time with, Jeremy Hahn, artist extraordinaire. Good to see you, Jer.
How's it going?
Excellent, man. Very excited for you. Coming this week, one of the Battle for the Cowl tie-ins is coming up, written by David Hein, Arkham Asylum. What can you tell us about the story?
It's actually a great, just it's a horror story almost in a lot of ways. I mean, David's stories a lot of times focus on kind of the more horrific, kind of fun, just darker side of humanity, and that's definitely tapped into in Arkham. It's a story that I enjoyed the hell out of getting to draw. I got to draw some of my favorite villains in it, a bunch of new stuff. It's just an utterly enjoyable experience.
Will we mostly see regular Batman rogues in this story, or are there some new villains or important characters to the story?
I can't give away too much. I mean, it does focus on events that happen after Arkham explodes in the first Battle for the Cowl issue. It's a spoiler, I guess. But, you know, anyway. But it focuses on Arkham coming back to the asylum and everything that goes on with that, you know, him figuring out the next step in things. We get to see, you know, a few of the regulars, some, you know, really, really cool, enjoyable characters to draw. But then we get to see some different stuff, stuff that we've never seen before, some real hints about what's going to happen in the future. It's just a really fun time for me.
And I know you have cultivated a good relationship with a lot of the editors in the Bat office. We spoke about this a few weeks ago off camera. I don't think we've had an opportunity to talk about it, but I know as a nice little giveaway, you kind of came up with a good idea, and I know the Bat office got very, very excited about some ID cards that you created.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of a funny thing. Every time that I start a new project, I always like to try to, you know, immerse myself a little bit in it. And I did a an example of the Arkham badges, and I did one for Jeremiah Arkham, just, you know, for, you know, basically just for fun, and ended up showing it to Janelle Siegel, the assistant editor of the Bat Group, and she's like, "Oh my God, these are awesome!" You know, which much more, yeah. Well, she's gonna punch me in the head now, but no, she really liked them, and she asked me for the New York Con if I would mind doing a set of them for the Bat Office. And I was like, yeah, okay, that's perfect. So I ended up doing one for Mike, Mike Martz, and then Sig Lane also. And yeah, and then Harvey, his assistant editor, and Janelle, and then Janelle's husband, because, you know, I love Lucas, so, you know.
Lucas Siegel's a good man, so that's cool.
So anyway, I ended up doing those, and they really liked them, and it's just, you know, I mean, it's a fun little thing. It's just, like I said, I like to really immerse myself in whatever I'm doing. I think, you know, for me, a lot of it was figuring out what my Gotham was like, what my Arkham was like, and, you know, and I really want to respect everything that's been done before and try to really take a look at the way that it's been done and then add my little bit of you know, just this and that to it.
Greg Rucka told me that at a couple conventions, there was a guy who, based on what he's read in the stories, kind of laid out a real map of Gotham City. And because of all the various streets that were mentioned in various locations, it's like there's like warehouses on every block of abandoned warehouses of every block of Gotham and funny stuff like that. And of course you've got like Kane Avenue and, you know, Finger Way and things like that. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting. I mean, there have been a couple of maps. I know there was a post No Man's Land map and a few things that kind of lay Gotham out, and, you know, and you basically can understand what it looks like. And there are even some buildings that are actually, you know, like icons within the story. You know, you've got Wayne Tower and various things. So, you know, it's always nice to be able to think about how those look and then try to come up with this city that's packed with, you know, an old building next to a new building next to something that's kind of, you know, crazy and dilapidated next to something that's got cool bridges and walkways and very, you know, I mean, the nice thing about it is you can look at, you know, years and years of history of wonderful design. You can look at first work on the Batman movies. You can kind of pull all that together and kind of respect what's come before, but then come up with something that's really nice.
Well, the one other thing I've noticed, too, both at DC and Marvel, for you, as a guy that is still, you know, making his presence known at the big two, they've always matched you with really cool writers. Christos Gage at Marvel and Chris Claremont, of course, and now with David Hein for this story, and even at Top Cow doing things with, like, Josh Fialkoff and stuff. So, you know, I think you've been blessed with good writers, and they've turned out to be great books.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've been really, I mean, exceptionally. I've had kind of a career that you talk to friends and they're like, yeah, you know, it's all right. They have a tough time and everything. I've been lucky from pretty much day one. I think that whether it's, you know, working on more independent stuff with B. Clay Moore or, you know, Christos Gage, David Hein, you know, any of these guys, they're just great talent. And I think that they, each one presses me to do something that kind of expands my abilities a little bit, you know, forces me to kind of come out of my shell and try something new, and I am always grateful for that.
We mentioned B. Clay Moore, Battle Hymn, a wonderful book that the two of you did together, was acknowledged on a list of, was it librarians who compiled this list, but it was like the top 500 graphic novels,
right,
and Battle Hymn was one of them. That's terrific.
Yeah, I was actually really surprised to find that on there. I mean, I love the books, and it's one of the things that I'm consistently very, very proud of, but it was really nice to kind of get in among, you know, I mean, 499 books that I love. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
so you're there with Watchmen and, you know, Dark Knight Returns. Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's already a pretty esteemed list. It's nice to be part of it.
Oh yeah, you know, and to, you know, these books that I've loved for so long, you know, written and drawn by brilliant guys, and I'm like, well, you know, we're morons, but, you know, it's really nice to be among that company.
And a book that you're currently working on for Top Cow is called Berserker. Interesting project. Milo Ventimiglia from Heroes is involved. And how would you describe his capacity in the book?
Well, he's just really excited. I mean, that's basically the way that it works is Rick Lovard took the book to Divide Pictures, which is Milo Ventimiglia and Russ Cundiff, and basically said, here is this project, you know, I'd like to do something with it. And they're like, this would make a kick-ass comic book.
That's true.
You know, and Milo's said it several times, but he is a big comic book fan. He, you know, loves the medium. And rather than, you know, necessarily going, well, let's do the movie thing with this, they want to make it a great comic book. And it's just a great story. I can't be happier with working with these guys. You know, everybody, you know, there's a big difference whenever you turn in pages and, you know, you get back, yeah, this is good, you know. And you know, I always get, like, you know, some sort of explicative and yeah, you know. So it's like they're just super excited about the book. They get excited when the pages come in. It's a wonderful experience.
It's a fun action, very violent book in a good way.
Oh, yeah.
But how would you describe the story if you gave us the 5-cent tour?
Basically, you know, in history, they're berserkers, and these guys that would go mad on the battlefield, they would destroy anything around them. And now we're taking that to a modern setting where you've got these guys that are students or work in a factory or whatever it is, and they have these episodes where basically they go berserk. And whether you're friend, foe, it does not matter. If you're in the line of sight of these guys, you're going to die.
Issue 1 has come out. Where are we in the series?
Actually, issue 0 has come out. Issue 1 is going to be out in July.
Okay.
No, June. June. And it's going to be out in June, and it's going to be a 6-issue mini. And I'm working my tail off on it right now.
Excellent, man. Well, continued success. We hope to see more from you for DC and Marvel. And in the meantime, we'll enjoy Berserker from Top Cow. You can also check out books like Jeremy's written for Oni Press, Narcoleptic Sunday, where he takes a break from his art duties and wrote a very fine crime story there. That was kind of cool.
Thanks.
And always looking for more from Jeremy Hahn. And I'll be stalking him at a convention very soon after this one. So it's good seeing you, man, and we'll talk soon.
It was great talking to you, John.
You know him from Pax Romana and Transhuman and Red Mass for Mars for Image Books. And then, of course, his Marvel work, Secret Warriors that he's doing with Brian Bendis, and Fantastic Four, both Dark Reign. Soon to be following Mark Miller on the new book, it's John Hickman. How you doing, Jonathan?
I'm good.
Excellent. Secret Warriors, issue 3 came out with a fabulous cover by Jim Chung, but we won't talk to him because he won't talk to me. But anyway, no, it's I want to talk about the book because it's fun. And what I really like about it is it's been fun. As the story progresses, not only learning about the new team, but seeing the Countess and Dum-Dum Duggan suddenly come back to the story, because there were some unanswered questions, obviously, at the end of Secret Invasion.
Sure.
That obviously were going to be explored here in Secret Warriors.
Yeah, I mean, the beautiful thing about Secret Warriors, besides the fact that editorial is completely behind us and letting us do the story that we want to do, is, you know, you got 40, 50 years of really cool history on top of the cool new little story that you're trying to tell. And I don't know, I kind of feel like I wouldn't be doing my job if I wasn't exploiting all of that. So I sometimes worry that we're trying to do too much in the first arc. But, you know, nowadays, you know, you feel like you have to accelerate things so rapidly. And I didn't want to do a slow unwind. So, you know, that's why we started the first issue the way that we did. And that's why we're going to be ending, you know, the arc with 5 and 6 the way that we are. So we feel good about it. It's a good book.
It is a good book, and I think you've hit the ground running with characterization as well, especially with these newcomers. A lot was learned in that initial issue, as you say, as they go around the group and everything. Phobos has been a very fun character to watch, and, you know, is not a precocious kid and really an old soul trapped in this 12-year-old body, obviously.
Yeah, that's a fantastic character to write. I love that kid. The second arc is God of Fear, God of War. You know, so we're going to be answering a lot of the Ares Phobos questions, which, you know, people have been patient about, I guess. But no, I mean, it's a good character. They're all pretty, you know, I don't know if I buy into the there's a good character or bad character. It's kind of the job that you do with them. And we're trying hard.
Well, and succeeding, Nick Fury is such a great character. And I've enjoyed all the incarnations of Nick Fury. You're joining an elite group with guys like Howard Chaykin,
yeah,
Garth,
yeah.
Ennis, no pressure, John.
Coming, right, obviously.
But it's, no, it's really cool. And I like that your Fury is an older soul and more of a Lee Marvin Fury and really does, you know, kind of reflect despite the Infinity injection,
yeah,
whatever it is.
Infinity formula.
Infinity,
yeah.
Formula, exactly. That this is an old warhorse. And you're kind of feeling his age in this issue. He's still a very vital character. But again, this is a world-weary character that's kind of seen it all, too.
Yeah, I mean, he's been through it. And I think it's you know, I think sometimes it's a missed opportunity not to show our characters aging just a little bit. You know, we have to keep them eternally young because they're important, viable Marvel properties. But, you know, we're taking a little bit of artistic license, and we're playing with the old man a little bit, you know, and that's okay. That's okay. I mean, I think people seem to be responding to it, and I think that's and positively, and I think that's probably the, you know, how you judge it, how you gauge it. So
Fury's had the weight of the Marvel Universe on his shoulders really since Secret War. We've been feeling that, and now in Dark Reign Fantastic Four, we're getting that same vibe from Reed Richards, where we're really seeing him take a proactive look at what he could have done and differently, specifically in this arc you're exploring in Dark Reign, to maybe have the events of Civil War, you know, have gone a different way. And I think that's really an interesting way to look at Reed.
I thought there was a real opportunity with the Fantastic Four mini. If you look at kind of what the writers did post-Civil War, and everything that's happened. I mean, everything's been very, very exciting in the Marvel Universe. But, you know, Miller and Hitch are kind of doing their own thing, and they're not really, I mean, of course they're in continuity, but they're not really addressing the Dark Reign stuff. And, you know, Straczynski took the thing to France during Civil War and, you know, just kind of played off the main book. And I think since then, you know, even though I've read all that stuff as research, I think there was a real opportunity to do a lot of closure and address all of that stuff. And that's kind of what the series turned into. Now, as I started writing it, like I told you the other night, you know, you have all these great Fantastic Four ideas, and you find out you're going to be writing the regular series. You want to save a lot of them for that.
Sure.
But I think we're telling a really tight story. I think that it gets to a certain point. I think it is a not necessary read before we start the regular Fantastic Four run, but I think it definitely colors it and adds to it. And that's kind of how I'm treating it. So,
well, and tone, in at least from a tone standpoint, I think it's a very good companion to what Miller and Hitch are doing as well, because this is still the family, and them, you know, the characters are certainly, you know, the tone is the same, and it's just a different aspect, and it's, you know, the week that they weren't you know, off in Europe as Miller and Hitch in Scotland, exactly, as Miller and Hitch had them, or dealing with this Doom story that's coming up.
Fantastic Four Dark Reign takes place over 2 days. Okay, so, I mean, there's no trouble squeezing it in somewhere. Yeah. So, there was an editorial mandate. There was a pitch given out by me. It was approved, and it works. And, you know, it is what it is, you know.
Well, and the good news is, I would say, if people are reading Miller and Hitch and were wondering what they would get from a Hickman Fantastic Four, I really think if you've enjoyed what you've seen with Miller and Hitch, you're going to find a similar tone and a different story, but again, a similar vibe with what's happening in the Dark Reign arc. And I don't want you to spoil too far for what's coming up in Fantastic Four, but what can you tell us?
The first arc is called Solve Everything, and Reed sets out to do so.
Excellent. Let's talk about some of your Image projects that helped you get your Marvel jobs. You told me Red Mask from Mars is wrapping up soon?
Ryan is done with... Ooh, I'm so sorry.
No problem. The modern technology.
This is the wife.
Excellent.
I'm sorry, honey. I'm going to have to put you on ignore.
Oh, man.
All right, I'm getting him in touch with the wife.
All right.
Ryan's finished up 4. He's got 1 page left, but, I mean, he's done a really good job. And so 3 is getting ready to go to press. It'll be followed directly by 4. So we're finally going to get Red Mass out. I'm sorry for the delay, but we both got busy. And you know, we fell behind on that. My fault. I'm sorry. And then the Pax Romana trade is getting ready to go to press. And I'm very excited about that. It's got a cool forward by Blair Butler. And it's got a very cool added material in the back. And, I like that book. I'm proud of that
book.
Yeah,
I love that book.
I'm proud of it. And I get emails constantly. When's the trade coming out? When's the trade coming out? Soon.
Excellent.
It's going to press now. So.
Very cool. An interesting time paradox in a way that I don't think has been addressed before in comics. It certainly felt fresh to me. Much like John's first work, Nightly News, did. That's what I like about John. He's a very unique voice, and both in design and story, and his writing and his art. I really recommend that if you've enjoyed his Marvel work, check out some of these Image books as well. Really neat ideas. He's a high concept guy and delivers a great story every time. It's John Hickman, and we're going to continue to follow his work in Marvel and the other projects as well. And it's always good talking to you, man.
Absolutely. Thank you.
How about that? We were just admiring Jason Statham, as two hetero men should. It's Ben Templesmith, folks. I'm so pleased to see him. One of the finest artists in the business who brings the most unique style to comics, and I enjoy...
You're a good liar.
It's the truth, man, honestly. From 30 Days of Night, which I probably think was the first thing I was exposed to of your work, and Fell, the wonderful stuff you did with Warren Ellis as well, and now continuing doing great stuff with IDW. Tell me about this Groom Lake with Chris Rael, a really neat UFO concept.
Yeah, I just basically said I want to work with Chris. I said, like, have you got anything? And I'm like, yeah, all right, I'll get around to it. So a year later, he says, all right, I've got a story, and it's an alien thing. I'm like, well, that's great. And so I read the script, and it's more like X-Files-ish and very conspiracy-related, but very sort of typical conspiracy sort of alien thing. I'm like, you know what? Maybe the alien should be smoking, and maybe there should be, like, mutant penises on it. And, like, you can really fuck it up. He goes, you know what? Maybe. Okay. Yeah, let's do that. And so he wrote this one instead.
That's outstanding.
He had to make it a bit more like the stuff I'm used to. He's like, yeah, come on, spice it up a little. Put some dick in there.
There you go. There's nothing.
The cross work in that book is amazing.
Very cool.
It's only a small part of the book, but
I understand.
But yes.
It helps.
There's no actual nudity, it's all implied, but
oh, okay. Very cool.
There is a dog grafted onto a certain part of genitalia. So. Aliens, I don't know.
Yeah, that's fine. It works for me. Let the aliens come and prove you wrong if you're wrong.
Yeah, kinky. The only people that like come into someone's room in the middle of the night and stick something up their butt are alien greys or maybe Catholic priests.
This is awesome. I love when
Catholic priests.
Not at all. Hey, man, this is the internet. We get
kind
to say
known for it.
We get to say whatever we want, especially when you're on Word Balloon. So I'm very happy about that.
I don't hate Catholics. Just the bad ones.
I understand. That's all right. I wanted to ask, because I've asked Steve this question, Niles, in horror, your stuff reminds me of the portraits we used to see at Night Gallery, Rod Serling's 1970s show. I know you're from Australia, so I don't know if that's come down there. But
I'm young.
Well, I understand.
Well, youngish.
Youngish.
No, I'm not familiar with that at all. Sorry.
Okay. Well, your stuff, there's horrific images, but a lot of in film... It's that shock value of you don't know what's around the corner, or you don't know when the person turns around what they're going to see. So there's that surprise in static images and stuff conveying horror. It's the gore, but I mean, like, you know what?
Not really.
You tell well. Tell me.
Well, like the thing that made the X Files relatively popular for a while was everything was implied. You never actually saw much of anything. It was all the implication.
Right.
So I try to do most of that in my work, and it's all about lighting and mood. I mean, I do. Outright gore, but people make the mistake and think like, oh, I'm going to do a comic and it's going to be Frankenstein and he's beating the shit out of a werewolf, you know, and it's a big fight comic. Like, that is not horror. That is a big superheroic fight comic,
right.
Fantastical thing.
That happens to have monsters.
Yeah, horror is about mood and trying to actually frighten people. It's not just gore. It's more in the realm of torture porn, which I mean, I honestly I can do that, but it doesn't thrill me. But I'm more about mood. If you get the mood right, you can really imprint a reader experience into the work. So, I mean, Fell is not horror,
no,
but I give it a vibe which is horror-ish.
Absolutely.
And I mean, that's what I do, so I try to do. So
happy with IDW? I know you've been there for years now. I mean, do you see yourself working for other companies at any length, at any time? And again, nothing against Chris. Sorry, Chris, I don't mean any disrespect or anything.
Well, I'm actually I'm currently exclusive with them.
Okay.
It's basically a work visa related thing, really. But I wanted to come over to America and hang out, meet a lot of people, and just really get more hands on comics. But I'll be ending the exclusive soon.
Okay.
And I got a job that I can't say what it is yet, but
okay.
Couldn't really pass it up.
Excellent.
So, and that's with a different publisher. It probably will be a different publisher. And yeah, I always plan on doing stuff with IDW. Wormwood will be a Wormwood Gentleman Corpse will be something I'll always be doing.
Okay. Ongoing series?
Yeah, but I like to dabble with other things as well.
Sure.
So I'm getting out there now. It's like, it's weird. I've reached a transition point, I think, in my career, but people actually want to talk to me now. No, I don't mean you.
Right here?
No, I get strange emails. Yeah, and outside of comics as well, but like strange emails with really interesting things. And I'm like, you know what? I should probably try and broaden my horizons in many ways.
But I
will still be in comics. I'm not going to leave comics.
Excellent. Because I was going to say, I can certainly see the strengths of having you involved with conceptual art and production art for television and film. And I hope those avenues open for you.
I can't say anything, obviously. But
I understand.
But life is getting progressively more interesting.
Fantastic. So. Well deserved, because again, your unique voice and style comes through in your work. I got to ask about Doctor Who. That's cool.
You're going to ask me about Fell and when the next issue of Fell's coming?
I was going to get to that as well. We're on Fell, so tell me.
All right, I need to get this out to as many people as possible.
Absolutely.
I answer this question about 1,000 times every convention I do. There will be more Fell.
Okay.
When Warren wants to write more,
okay,
it's up to him. I'm ready and willing whenever Warren wants to do it. Thanks, Warren. no, really, I will. I will drop.
Sure.
That's a book I will do until I die, no matter... Basically, when Warren wants to do it, I will do it.
Well, the great thing about
ready and willing.
The great thing about Fell and Casanova, I'm glad that Matt and Gabriel and Fabio were able to do this as well. A very affordable book, especially in these times, and serious quality. And you guys pack a lot of stories into 16 pages, and that's what made it so great. I mean,
yeah.
Top quality people up and down, doing their best and giving it at a fair price.
I've had quite a few discussions with Warren, especially when we started doing it, his ideas for it. I pretty much share the same philosophy in comics with him. He's a trailblazer. He tries new things.
Absolutely.
At least he tries.
Yes.
So I agreed with him in principle on the nature of Fell, and then more recently we actually had he actually pointed out a few things to me I didn't know about the format, about with the printing and the costings, like how clever he was in making it work.
Sure.
So I mean, it still doesn't work for everyone. But I think more people should try that format, maybe, especially with every comics going up in price. But.
Yeah, I'm hoping there are more, you know, affordable comics, especially the flop.
I'm saying that pretty much all my comics are $3.99 and always have been. So.
But again, you made the effort with Fell, and I think that's really cool, man.
Yeah, for me, comics aren't really about money. They're more about, I love the medium itself. So, honestly, you have to live, and I'm lucky enough to earn a living. But, no, I'm in for the long haul. Even if I end up doing some sort of big crazy thing, I would still want to, like, do comics, even in my spare time, and then put it out eventually. So I'll never disappear unless I'm dead.
Doctor Who, everything?
Yeah, Doctor Who. What about it?
Fun?
Yeah.
Okay. Ooh, yeah.
No, working with Liam Moore and John Repian was great.
Yes.
I actually tried to get them to pitch, and it worked out great. The story was fantastic. No, when I said, it's a licensed book.
Sure.
It's a light. You have to get likenesses.
Yeah,
that tires you out. It's a hard book, and then there's an approval process and things. So it's not like I can just do what I want.
Right,
I had to be much more constrained. There's a lot more work. So, but hopefully it paid off. No one said anything bad about it.
No, it's great, but it surprised me that a creator like you, that is, you know, known for your
huge Doctor Who fan.
Awesome.
So. But I think I'll only have one shot in me.
Okay,
it's too much work to do too much more. So. I'm not stupid. I know my limits.
Excellent. So I'm assuming the stuff you can't talk about, will it come out in San Diego or months later? Or
I don't know what they've got planned, because it's not a comic book publisher that's actually doing it, but they're going to... I'm not going to say anymore.
Fair enough. No, that's all right, man.
It's not like huge news or anything. It's just something in the pipeline that I had to end my exclusive early and get ready for this pretty awesome job that...
Excellent, man. Well, you know, with the time difference, it's tough for me to be able to coordinate something on the phone with you or Nicholas Scott, another Aussie that I really enjoy her work.
I'm in San Diego now, right now.
Oh, you're in San Diego?
I didn't realize
that, man. Because I see you on Twitter, and I'm like, I follow you on Twitter, and I'm like, I wonder how many days behind we are.
It's killing me, but I actually go into the offices of IDW
and
work like 9 to 6, and that kills me because I'm not a morning guy. No, but I am in San Diego, West Coast time.
Well, then,
you can talk to me anytime.
Well, wonderful. Then plan on seeing a message from me soon, and we'll set a phone interview, and we'll talk even more.
You're just going to tell me I'm stunning again.
He's a stunning man, isn't he, kids? Now
I'm
know.
I'm wearing my suit today.
Yeah, but
I have to go to the airport.
That's all right. The video shows. Yeah, but you were styling all weekend, man, and you got the hair to prove it.
I
so that's good.
I'm a nice old man to be bowler again.
Well, all right. Well, I was going to say I'm a nice old man, so you're sitting next to me. So I'm not young either, though.
Neither am I.
44. How old?
31.
See. Still styling, still cool. Check out his stuff from IDW and other places, and interesting non-comic announcements in the future for Ben Templesmith. Pleasure to talk to you, man, and good seeing you.
Thank you.
John Suntress back at the FX Con with William Christensen here at the Avatar booth. William is the publisher of Avatar Comics, which has come a long way in its 13 years. William, it's good to see you, and I guess we should point out that back in the day when Avatar first started, it was, you know, considered the girl comics company.
Yeah.
And you guys have come a long way from there and become this very cool... forgive the phrase, boutique publisher,
sure,
that has become this great place where top name creators can come and tell their stories unfettered. And I think that's amazing.
Well, thank you very much. I started off with Bad Girl stuff because that was what I knew. I had worked with folks like London Knight and Chaos and came up during the heat of the Bad Girl craze. So when I decided I wanted to start publishing, go with what you know, and that was our entry in. So in 1999, Warren Ellis came aboard to do Strange Kiss, which Mike Wolfer drew, and that was when things really started changing for us as far as the type of material we published. The relationship with Warren grew, and he introduced me to Garth Ennis, and I started working with Alan Moore, and that's what really opened the floodgates for us. With those three, as our lead anchors, it gave us an audience that was far above and beyond what we had previously been able to achieve. In the early 2000s, we tried some licensed stuff. We dipped our toes in those waters, and so we've done a lot of different sort of things to try to, forge our identity, and honestly, for me to figure out what I most enjoyed doing. And the creators that I work with are, fantastic, and I'm thrilled with our books, and I've gotten to know all of them personally, and I, enjoy them greatly. They're all brilliant. The artists I work with, I've been able to handpick my team, and so I'm in this wonderful, enviable position of only having to work with people that I like. And, so it's great. I mean, Avatar is everything now that I always dreamed it could be.
That's great, man. And the people that you like are incredibly talented because, again, are able to tell these stories without any boundaries and have really taken advantage of that. I mean, Warren, obviously, it's interesting. People might think that Warren's, Marvel work, they might only be aware of that. But really, right now, if you look at the monthlies and stuff, it's Avatar where you're getting the most Warren Ellis stuff on a consistent basis.
Yeah, he does Astonishing X-Men and Marvel and still has, miscellaneous smaller projects coming out with a new Universal periodically. He's got several little things, sure. But the vast majority of Warren's work comes out through Avatar now, which is awesome.
And again, interesting ideas and not afraid to explore different platforms to exploit these stories in. Freak Angels is a perfect example of that, something that started online and is being collected in full publication as well. And you can read it online for free at Avatar and get the books from Avatar.
Yeah, exactly. Freakangels.com, 6 new pages every week, and it's free. And we've been running for, a year and a half now. And it's exciting. When Warren and I first started talking about doing a webcomic, I said, okay, if we're going to do it, I want to make it the best webcomic. And so we were able to get Paul Duffield, who is an amazing talent, and he pencils, inks, and colors all of his own work, which gives it a totally unique feel. And his, he's committed for the long haul. We've got him on for a couple more years at least. And he's hitting his deadlines, and the books, it's coming out online, 6 pages every week. The collected editions have been doing fantastic, selling really, really well. So it's a new, different business model. It's risky for me because I was insistent on making sure all the creative talent got paid up front. So, all the financial burdens on us as a publishing company, which, when you're giving away the wares for free, does get a little nerve-wracking initially.
Sure.
But the trade paperback sales have been great.
Excellent.
And so it looks like long-term it'll work.
Good.
But, it's not something that we're going to suddenly do a zillion webcomics.
Okay.
We do have plans for a second webcomic for later on in 2009. But, it's a nice supplemental to all of our regular monthly publications. We want to do something different because I know we're getting a different readership. We're pulling in people with Freak Angels that had never been exposed to Avatar before. And even at this convention, there were people that came up and said, oh, I'm in love with Freak Angels. What else can you sell me? And that's what we want to do.
Excellent. Well, let's talk about the image right behind us right now, Ignition City, which, as we're taping this, had just come out this week. And, man, I got to tell you, the visuals are incredible. I wanted to take a moment and really sink into it, but I had to get ready for this con. So for me and for the audience, I've been blown away by the images. But tell us about Ignition City.
Ignition City is where the space heroes go to die. Ignition City is the last spaceport left on Earth. And all the old heroes, Warren's new versions of them, but... if there was a Flash Gordon, where the last place Flash can go when he can't get off planet is Ignition City. And it's the story of Mary Raven, the main protagonist, who travels there because her father was recently passed away on Ignition City. And so she's going there to collect his, his remains and his last possessions. And she uncovers there's a whole lot more going on behind than just him dying of natural causes. So, Warren introduces us to the whole decrepit, depraved cast of Ignition City, and it's great. He's just, once again, created this totally immersive world Gianluca, it's the first project we've got out from him since Etheric Mechanics, which he did with Warren.
Awesome book.
Yeah.
I love that book. Kind of a Sherlock Holmes pastiche for people who haven't seen it. And a real bargain at $6 or $7.95.
$6, yeah.
Yeah, $6 is a one-shot. It's a really great story.
And so they're a great team. And so Gianluca's doing the entire series for Ignition City. And it's going great. I mean, issue one has been a tremendous seller for us. And every store I've talked to here has been telling me only one thing. We sold out the first day.
It doesn't surprise me. The cover immediately attracted my attention. Successive covers. Are these alternate covers that I see here at the book?
This is an exclusive we made for the convention.
Okay. And I know, and you mentioned there's you kind of Flash Gordon type and everything. I saw that image, and I'm sure we'll have that in the interview as we're speaking. Just really great kind of pulpy, iconic space opera heroes and reflected in this series. And it's certainly my cup of tea, so that's cool. You mentioned Alan Moore, and I have to mention Light of Thy Continents, a very interesting article or short story that Alan did, kind of his treatise on where television fits in society and kind of in a dangerous way, brought to life now in comic form and beautifully illustrated. And tell me about the artist and putting this into comic book form as opposed to Alan's original form.
Okay. When I originally talked to Alan about it, the first publication of the work long, long ago in the 80s was edited. And so the total unedited version hadn't actually seen print. So we had Anthony Johnston, who is his frequent collaborator on The Courtyard and UF Cultures and several other projects for us, adapted that into sequential form, which Alan thought was great. And then I had the wild harebrained scheme of I want it to be fully painted. I want my fully painted Alan Moore graphic novel. And that took a while. There's nothing fast about fully painted graphic novel. But Philippe Massafera did a beautiful job. Took about 2 years to get it all said and done, but now it's finally out, and I'm just a proud papa. You know, it's thrilling. Sent copies to Alan, and Alan is over the moon. He says he feels that the final work is actually an improvement on his original story.
I can appreciate that because his art is incredible, and it's so interesting to see these warm, friendly faces of television that both American and British audiences will instantly recognize. But given Alan's story, there really is this kind of creepy edge to it now, and it's at the same time beautiful yet disturbing, and it's a typical Alan Moore story. And Anthony clearly keeps Alan's voice in this comic translation, and I agree with you. I think the end result is a much bigger and better story. I'm glad Alan feels the same way.
Yeah. So you know, there's nothing better than getting the call from Alan Moore where he tells you how happy he is with the product. You know,
one of my favorite voices in comics is Jamie Delano, and I'm glad to see that he's involved with you with Rawbone.
Yeah.
Tell us about Rawbone.
Rawbone's the second project we've done with Jamie.
Okay.
We did Narcopolis.
Okay.
Which came out about a year and a half ago.
Yes.
And that was 4 issues. Rawbone is currently coming out. It's a 4-issue, really violent, depressing pirate story. You know, but it's Jamie again getting a chance to push the envelopes. And you know, there's lots of supernatural and horror elements, and Jamie likes creating a cauldron of throwing lots of different types of things together under, you know, one genre. And so while on the surface it's a pirate book, it gets far deeper than that, as all of his works tend to. It's great fun. You know, so if you like Jamie and you like really vicious pirates, then Rawbone is the book.
Excellent, man. It's these kind of books from Avatar that make it cool. We're going to be talking to Christos Gage and Mike Wolfer later on, and make sure you look for those interviews as well. One other book I want to mention, Black Summer, which really made a big splash last year and was Warren's kind of statement on the previous presidential administration and the war on terror. A very interesting, dark story. What else can you tell us about it?
Well, Black Summer was, you know, to date, still our biggest hit ever.
Okay.
I mean, just an amazing seller for us. I mean, there's not enough great things I can say about it. Warren just delivered a home run. He's our Babe Ruth. You know, he sort of calls where in the park he wants to put it. But with Black Summer, he timed it perfectly. You know, we kill the previous administration. John Horace decides that he's had enough. He's the most powerful superhero in the land. And the president and his advisors are obviously terrible people that shouldn't be in power. So he's going to eliminate them. And so we start the first issue with he actually kills the president.
Yeah, the death of the president is how it starts. That's where the story starts. So if you haven't checked it out, you'll definitely want to. William, congratulations, man. Seriously, in 13 years, you made a very interesting publishing house in Avatar. I'm very happy being from Chicago, and William's from the surrounding area as well, Rantoul, Illinois. I think that's really neat, and you're one of the little engines that can, and continued success, man. They're great books, and we look forward to more from Avatar.
Thanks, buddy. I really appreciate it.
John Sutcher's back here at the Avatar booth talking more with some of the great creators at Avatar. I have a good opportunity to speak to one of the guys taking advantage of what we were talking about with William, the fact that creators can come here, do their own thing, completely uninhibited by any censorship or anything. Chris Gage, good to see you.
Good to see you, John, as always.
Tell me about Absolution.
Well, Absolution is a six-issue miniseries plus a zero-issue that's going to be coming out starting in late summer. We're going to try to debut it at San Diego Comic-Con. And the premise of Absolution, it's a bit like the TV show Dexter, if Dexter was a superhero. It's set in a world where superhumans exist. There are no hugely powerful Magneto-level superheroes. It's more down-to-earth, and they're sort of a division of law enforcement, like a SWAT team, let's say. And it's about a character named John Dusk, who's a veteran of the force. He's seen a lot of horrible things in his years, and he's also seen a lot of criminals and rapists and murderers get off scot-free, and the law can't touch them. Anyway, so John Dusk starts taking the law into his own hands, and as they say in Texas, some people just need killing. So he starts taking care of that, even though it puts him on a collision course with his partners, his fellow superheroes, and his girlfriend, who's a homicide detective. And, you know, what's really cool, as you said about working for Avatar, is you can tell sort of a gritty cop drama without any restrictions as to violence, content, anything like that. So, I really hope to get across what it would be like to be, obviously, real-world superhero is an oxymoron, but more of an idea of what that would be like. We've seen it done brilliantly, of course, in Miracle Man with, you know, earth-shattering stuff, and this is a bit of a more down-to-earth type of story.
And through your TV work on things like Law & Order SUV, I mean, SVU? It says SVU. SUV is the car company version.
That's right.
But no, you've done police procedures. We've seen you do it as well.
Yeah.
In Wildstorm with Stormwatch. Yes.
Yeah, and it's in the same vein like that. It's a lot of the same. You know, using those same muscles, the police procedural story, but also with a great spin to it. It's got that, you know, extreme. If you like Deadshot, if you like Stormwatch PhD, it's those turned up to the next level. So you'll like it.
Very cool. Let's talk a little bit about your Marvel work. You've got Avengers The Initiative Continues, and you want people to know, obviously, that it is continuing.
Yes. Somehow a rumor got started on the internet that an initiative was being canceled. I think someone said that there was a book that wouldn't be continuing after Secret Invasion. The initiative is not being canceled. The only way the initiative will be canceled is if people think it's being canceled and they stop buying it. So don't stop buying it. No, we're actually coming into a really exciting period. The initiative is still in existence under Dark Reign, but it's now run by Norman Osborn. So it's been corrupted in a way, and now it reflects Norman Osborn. Whereas before, the initiative existed to train the Avengers of tomorrow. Now it exists to train the Dark Avengers of tomorrow. So the Taskmaster is running a school for supervillains, which is what he does best. But now he's teaching them how to act like heroes while still behaving like villains on the down low. So we'll have some of the good guy characters from the initiative are still there for one reason or another. Norman has leverage on them, or they're trying to make the best of a bad situation, and they're struggling with what to do. On the other hand, we have some who have just gone underground and become the Rebellion, to use Star Wars terminology. The initiative is the Empire, and these guys are the Rebels. Tigra among them, she's going to be getting some payback for the beating the Hood handed her. She's going to start, now that she's the outlaw, she's going to start, you know, doing to them what they did to her. And a lot of the original New Warriors will be part of that group. And then we'll also, I love writing villains, as you know, so we also get to focus on some of the villains who are training to be heroes and what it's like for them. And when they realize, wait a second, we're actually expected to put our lives on the line for average people? You know, what's going on here? So it's a lot of fun, and I love bringing in, you know, established characters and obscure characters. I'm going through some old books like Speedball comics and Dazzler comics and finding villains that you probably have never heard of and breaking them out.
Excellent. Also, I understand a big announcement happened this weekend. You are returning to the House of M universe. You followed up Brian Bendis's series with a look at the Underground Avengers, basically. Forgive me, was it House of M Avengers?
Yes.
There you go. So what's the new House of M thing?
The new House of M is called House of M Masters of Evil, and it's more villain stuff, which I love. And it looks at what the villains of the House of M world did. The main character is the Hood, and as in the main Marvel Universe, the Hood put together a gang of villains, except in the House of M world, it was non-mutant villains, the Absorbing Man, Titania, the Sandman, Crossbones, all these guys, Batroc the Leaper, who Mike Perkins is very excited about, and they basically get together to be able to steal in a world where Magneto's army cracks down pretty hard. But along the way, they realize they're becoming an inspiration to people, so it gives them the opportunity to pull off the scam of a lifetime, and we will explore that. And the artist is Manuel Garcia, who's really terrific, and Mike Perkins, who drew House of M Avengers, is busy drawing The Stand, so he couldn't draw the inside, but he's doing the covers, so he's still as part of the team. And speaking of artists, I forgot to mention that Rafa Sandoval has been announced as the new artist of the initiative. Humberto Ramos did a great arc, and then he's moving on to a creator-owned project. And then Rafa Sandoval, who's one of Marvel's young guns, is coming in starting with issue 26. He did some great work on Incredible Hercules during the Skrull War part, and he's just awesome. I'm really excited about him.
Excellent. I'm glad Mike is able to continue being connected to House of M. Absolutely. And you guys always work together. I always tell you guys that Union Jack was such a fun ride.
Yeah.
And yeah, it. You know, and also Mike is doing an excellent job on Stephen King's Stand adaptation. Yeah. So if you haven't checked it out, Mike, for if you don't know, Mike was alternating too on Captain America with Steve Epting for a long time in the initial run. So always does beautiful work and works well with Chris.
That's right.
And Wildstorm continues for you as
yes,
well?
Yes, absolutely. Wildcats is continuing. We're coming up on issue 12, which has the climax of the conflict with Majestic. And then we go into a six-part storyline, which is the culmination of everything I've been leading up to since I started doing Wildcats. The villain is Tau from Ed Brubaker's Sleeper. And he's been accumulating godlike power, and he's trying to remake the post-apocalyptic world in his own image, and the Wildcats and Team 7 have to get together to stop him. So it's literally, this is what I've been building up to from the beginning, and it's going to be just a big old school, like Jim Starlin, cosmic level, you know, throwdown. So I'm very excited.
Excellent. And I guess you're in post-production with a film you and your wife co-wrote?
Yeah, Ruth and I wrote a film called Paradox based on a creator-owned comic of ours from some years ago, and it shot up in Vancouver with Kevin Sorbo. And, you know, I mean, obviously we're still a bit out of touch as what's going on, because once it's out of your hands, it's out of your hands. But we wrote the screenplay. They shot it in Vancouver, and I understand they're in post-production now. So we're waiting for word on, you know, when it'll be coming out.
Excellent, man. Well, I demand a screener. And when the film is ready to be talked about, I hope you'll come back on War Balloon, and we'll talk more about that.
I'll be more than happy to.
Good luck with everything that's going on. Also, hey, I would have forgot, IDW, G.I. Joe. Chris is a big part of that as well.
Yep.
Let's talk about G.I. Joe Cobra.
Sure. Well, Mike Costa, my co-writer, and I are working on that. And actually, we've just agreed to do a follow-up to it. So same creative team, me and Mike co-writing, and Antonio Fuso, the artist, doing the art. People who enjoyed the first one will like this one, too. Yeah, we've had two issues come out of G.I. Joe Cobra. People are loving it.
Yes,
I can't believe what we've been allowed to get away with. And when people see issue 3, either they'll be blown away, and they may turn on us. I'm prepared for that. I'm prepared to blame it all on Mike, because he's the one who knows all the G.I. Joe lore. I was actually sort of new to the G.I. Joe universe, so I'm prepared to deny that I had any part in it and, you know, direct everyone to Mike's house with the pitchforks and torches. So, no, but people are really – they're all saying to me, I can't believe what you guys are able to do, and Hasbro's been very supportive. They want a real-world, gritty tone to it, and we're having a great time.
That's excellent, and I'm glad Hasbro is allowing that kind of interpretation of G.I. Joe. And the franchise is in good hands with Larry Hama, Chuck Dixon, and a guy like Christos Gage. Good luck with that. Good luck with everything that's going on at Marvel and at Wildstorm. And, of course, here at Avatar, Absolution coming soon. And we'll be looking for that movie as well. So thanks, Chris. Thanks for
Thank
your time.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Happy Easter.
You too.
John Suntress hanging out at the Avatar booth here at the FX Con in Orlando, and happy to spend a moment with the co-creator of Gravel. It's Mike Wolfer. It's a pleasure to see you.
Very nice to see you, too.
Excellent, man.
I'm glad to be here.
And glad that you're staying with Gravel and continuing the series, as writer and co-writer and artist.
Right. I've been with the series from the very beginning when it was Strange Kiss originally. We did 6 miniseries, and then we spun that off into the monthly ongoing full-color series. And I'm just glad that I still have my hooks in him, you know.
Well, and you know, William had mentioned to me earlier that that Warren really, you know, is trusting you with the character and is, you know, co-writing with you, and I think that's very cool.
Yeah, I'm thrilled that apparently Warren has faith in me. I don't know why, but no, I try to do my best, and I try to keep it consistent with his voice, even though I'm co-writing and I'm doing a lot of the dialogue. I still try to keep it as close to Warren's vision as possible. So it's not a diluted version of Warren Ellis. It is Warren.
Sure.
I'm just kind of doing some of the footwork for him. So.
I hear you.
What do you like about gravel? I mean, what appeals, you know, and obviously everything, but yeah, tell me the interesting idiosyncrasies of gravel that appeal to you.
You know, I grew up reading comics, just like, you know, most of everyone, and following superheroes. I grew up, I matured, and I wanted something different. And there's nothing like gravel out there on the stands. People ask me all the time, would you describe gravel? What is it about? And I hesitate. Because I'm trying to find a comparison. There really is nothing else like it. It's so unique. There's elements of you know, action adventure and thrillers and the supernatural and the occult and the magic of it. And it's just, you know, when you say magic, people automatically, you know, think, you know, Harry Potter kind of
right,
stuff.
Right, fantasy, yeah.
And it's so far removed from that. It's just a unique package.
To me, and forgive the comparison to another company, but I think William would appreciate the comparison as well. It's like if you put Lee Marvin in a Vertigo magic thing, but kept the realism of a lot of the grittier street kind of Lee Marvin
there
movies.
You go. Right,
and that's
right.
And honestly, when I saw the character, that's who I saw. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that was in your mind at all when drawing him at all.
No.
Okay.
That's all you.
But that's good. That's cool.
Yeah.
Did you have a guy in mind? And I don't mean to get you in any infringement problems, but no, you know.
No, I really didn't. And it was based on Warren's concept too.
Okay.
He gave me a brief description. You know, he looks like this. Looks like that. Go run. Okay. So you know, no specific actor in mind. But
do you foresee a time when you'd like to, you know, write a solo gravel story and everything? And do you have some solo ideas that you'd like to kick around and talk about with Warren?
Why, yes, I do. Yes. You know, we've been talking about trying to do maybe a spinoff here or there, or maybe an annual or something. You know, and you know, if Warren's tied up and too busy,
sure.
I'm available.
Excellent.
So, and I have a lot of ideas of my own, which of course I would pass through Warren, and he would do his work and pass them back. You know, we have a great working relationship, and he's a fantastic guy to work with.
Very cool, man. In a lot of ways, I feel like Gravel is kind of like the flagship hero of Avatar and everything, and it's certainly the current look of Avatar.
I like to think so.
Absolutely.
and the character's in good hands with you, and continued success with the character and co-writing and enjoying the series, and
right.
It was a pleasure to talk to you, man. Mike Wolfer.
Thank you very much.
Happy to be talking to one of my favorite marketing guys, who's quickly becoming one of my favorite writer guys from Marvel Comics. It's Jim McCann, who you all know from New Avengers: The Return,
The Reunion,
New Avengers: The Reunion, which is the ongoing saga of Mockingbird and Hawkeye, or Ronin. Let's just say Clint and Bobby.
Yeah, it's a Clint and Bobby story.
It is a Clint and Bobby story. It's cool, Jim. It was really interesting to learn that your writing background stems from working at ABC Daytime. And in a very sequential way, soaps really do play out in that story A, story B, and story C level of storytelling, and it's neat to see you bring that to comics.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, the two medium are very, very similar in that if you're using characters that have been around for 60 years, will continue to be around, God willing, well past me and us. And so you have to respect their history and build upon that, tell compelling stories today, and not destroy them for future generations. I mean, these fans love the characters and will continue loving them, and these characters are real, and they need to live on. So, you know, make sure you respect and service the character first. And so that's just kind of how I approach media.
It's been fun to see that you've acknowledged. Obviously, a part of this story is trying to figure out their history in terms of when, you know, if for people who don't know, Bobby was replaced by a Skrull. We learned that in Secret Invasion. So now we have to go back and kind of revisit all those events. And much to Clint's surprise, finding out that moments that he thought he was spending with Bobby, obviously he was spending with a Skrull.
Yeah, and what that does to him. I mean, you know, you see at the end of issue 2 the emotional gut punch that he has, which is kind of why she's been keeping him at arm's length. There's a lot going on in her head that she knows, but there was also a lot going on in Clint's head. And she was wondering why he's so clingy, but it's because what he thought he and Bobby had, conversations he thought they had, and everything, they didn't. Their final days together, when he thought were final, that he's kept in his heart all that time when she died, at least we had final days together that were happy, they didn't. And so in the next issue, you find out where she's coming from, because if she was taken
thinking that they were ready to split. She was ready to leave him. What exactly did she go through? And she was one of the first taken, and she, you find out, she didn't just spend all that time sleeping. She went through some pretty messed up stuff, so we're getting even further into her head. So, you know, it's a fun psychological tale. There's the three layers. There's the psychology, the romance, and then the action.
Exactly, and that's what I was going to say, because we are spending time about the relationship end of the story, but really there's a good action story going on, a very Mr. and Mrs. Smith feel, and a good caper, and there's humor in here as well. I really like the scene in issue two, where Bobby has kind of set up the scenario for them to investigate something in fake identities. And they're both out of costume, but Clint is wearing a purple suit and basically Hawkeye's colors represented in suit. And even Hawkeye himself says, is this a dead giveaway? I mean, I like it because on the one hand, it identifies the character from a visual standpoint. But, you know, I mean, was that art direction from you, or is
it
that
was
something?
It lent for a fun joke, yeah. But it also, you know, I mean, I knew that they weren't going to... They're going undercover. And just two more issues of who are these people out of costume. So, and actually, the next issue, you're going to see what in issue three what Bobby's wearing. And David designed this amazing dress, and it has a black and white theme.
Very cool.
So, you know, they're still there. I would love to see toys of these. I'm just saying. Toy Biz, Hasbro, whoever has the rights right now. I don't know. Custom figure makers out there. No. But it helped lend it to them, and also kind of nods to their history, and just plays up. I mean, they kind of would poke each other, you know? I mean, they still have that relationship deep down. You know, they've got that love, and they also have that antagonism, and that's just what's so much fun to play with. They bring out the best and worst in each other, and be it emotionally or, here, this is what you're wearing, because you look better in that than you do wearing a ninja suit.
Now, not to get too far ahead of yourself, because I know you've obviously got to finish this arc. It's a four-issue arc.
Yes.
But beyond that, any other, and I don't need you to get into spoilers, but you know, any other ideas percolating for Marvel or outside?
There a lot all around. I have a couple of pitches in with Marvel. David and I are hoping to follow up with a lot of the things that are set up in the reunion. There's the WCA, where Bobby has hijacked the name WCA, but made it her own World Counterterrorism Agency.
Oh.
And which Twitchy, we introduced kind of a information guy. And then in the fourth issue, you will see another member of that team. It's a bunch of the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents that came home to no job. They weren't going to join Norman Osborn's hammer. So, you know, I mean, I think there's story to tell there. If sales and fans are willing to come, we're willing to produce. There's a couple other characters that I really want to play with, that I have pitches in with. And then... Mr. Hickman, who you just spoke with, I'm gesturing to his chair as though he were here, when he really, he's right there.
John Hickman, exactly.
So, you know, a lot of people have been talking about, you know, creator-owned, and that's something I really do want to do. I know that I'm just kind of starting out playing with the Marvel toys, and I want to develop my voice even more. I've worked on so many other things, like, you know, working in One Life to Live, characters, other people's things that I fear that I might be aping. So I want to create some things, hear my voice a little bit, work it out before necessarily playing more with the toys, you know, with some of the big guys. So I knew Bobby and Clint's voice so well just because they're my favorite characters in the world. So I hear them in my sleep. But, you know, I kind of want to hear and write out some of the other guys. So hopefully a creator-owned thing or two, but we'll see. We'll see.
Excellent, man. You know, I mean, that's the thing. Jim always at cons has brought his excitement into the marketing end of Marvel. But I really did want to point out, before he joined Marvel, his writing chops as well. And I'm glad we brought up this ABC stuff, because you're a good developing writer, and I continue to enjoy watching this development continue. And
thanks, John.
And yeah, it's a pleasure seeing you, and I'll enjoy the rest of the story, and keep my eyes open for the next project.
Thank you so much, John.
Good
and you guys, him. He's awesome. Keep watching. Keep listening. Kicks butt.
See, he always promotes, which is awesome, and I appreciate that. Jim McCann, folks. Thanks.
We'll stop there for now, but more coverage is coming and more episodes are coming in the days ahead. We've still got plenty of days left of April and more episodes on the way from Word Balloon. You're going to be hearing from some really cool people, Jason Aaron, Sal Abinanti. I even have interviews in the can and waiting to process with some of my fellow podcasters, as the Podcast Companion book is coming out soon from Tomorrow's Publishing. That'll be coming out next month. And I'll be talking to some of my compatriots on these very airwaves, and hope you enjoyed that talk as well. So full slate coming, and then big names coming in May as well. Keep your eyes open and peeled at my website, wordballoon.com, for more information on upcoming shows. But that'll do it for this episode. Thanks again for listening. This is John Suntress reminding you, if you want to contact Word Balloon, you can do it at the aforementioned message board at wordballoon.com. You can also follow me on Twitter. John Word Balloon is my handle there. You can also find me at iTunes, at Newsarama, or you reach me by email, john@wordballoon.com. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2009.